Anyway, I'm ready when you are.
Sure. No riff. I think we just hit the music this time. So
Someday we'll do a riff again, but we're busy.
it's
We're busy
business.
boys. We're busy boys.
Riffs are like a
Yeah. No,
like a
they're
frivolous type of like
That's right.
whimsical, like
Yeah.
this is business time.
Right, exactly. It's a business trip, it's business time. It's business time. Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Cheese Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter /X at Real Bird Lawyer, on Blue Sky at Bird Law Expert. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor underscore Witt on Twitter /X, on Blue Sky at Taylor M Witt. It's the Super Bowl, T. What's up?
Happy anniversary, buddy. This is episode number 200 for us in our little humble
Woo!
podcast. And we've done some that doesn't count emergency pods and little like when we cut off interviews and throw them separately. This is 200 full length in your face Chiefs football talk, and I couldn't be more proud of the little 4 year run room.
I couldn't be more proud of the 4 year run that we're on as a podcast, and I couldn't be more proud of the 6+ year run that the Patrick Mahomes Chiefs are on right now. And we are obviously going to talk about that all episode long. We've got a great show. We've got news, news, news. We've got our game preview because we got nothing to recap, and we're just looking forward to this Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, Chiefs Niners. And to help us do that, after our game preview, we'll be joined, as is tradition, by the Ringer's Ranish Zerli. He just put a new article out on the 15 throws that define Patrick Mahomes' career. That's not the exact title, but you get the
Plays.
idea. You can find it. Plays. Yeah, right, because there's some runs in there. But it's awesome. Ranny's going to be awesome. The show's going to be awesome. Let's do it. So let's start with the injury report. And I'd say overall, it's pretty good. Everybody who is currently on the active roster, that doesn't count, obviously, players who are on IR, Charles Omenihu, who, of course, will not be playing with the ACL injury, but everybody else on the team, with one exception, has been practicing this week, and that is Joe Tooney. He has that pectoral injury. We still have not heard exactly what the grade of that injury is. Did not practice Wednesday, did not practice Thursday. Sounds like he's going to be a mega long shot to be able to go. Andy, sort of midweek, said doesn't look like he's going to be able to go. And then James Palmer kind of swooped in and said, Joe Tooney's camp is still pushing for him to play. It's a strength issue. Like it's possible that, going into the weekend, he might try and give it a go. You'd think with a veteran like Joe Tooney, who has played almost every snap along that offensive line, and obviously is a veteran in the league, he's played every position, he's played with these guys all season long, that he probably doesn't need any practice reps if he's able to go, if he's strong enough to go. But he is the only one who did not practice on Thursday.
Yeah, it's fortunately, again, and we've mentioned this since he got hurt in the Buffalo game, Allegretti is not the sharpest drop off of that you would really worry about. Tooney is an all pro, he's great. The Chiefs are much better with him in there, but the Chiefs will be able to get by on the offensive line without him. That being said, I do want to point out that if he plays in the Super Bowl and the Chiefs win, he will become the 31st player to play in four or more Super Bowl victories. 28 players have four. Former San Francisco and Dallas defensive end Charles Haley has five. And of course, Tom Brady played in and won all seven of his. So Tooney would be tied for third all time in individual player rings. And that's not just being on the roster. This is snaps
And
in a
with
Super
only two
Bowl victory.
guys ahead of him, it
Yes,
sounds like.
correct.
That's
Yes.
crazy.
Yeah, it
That's
is. So, I
crazy.
mean, he's a very he's got a lot of legacy on the line himself to get that fourth ring. He, of course, has three already because he got one in his final year in New England with Brady. And I hope for his sake, if they could get him active on game day, even if they don't put him out there for every snap or whatever, get him in on a kneel down. get him in, you know, get him in there
Sure.
on an
Yeah.
extra point or something, and just get him a snap in this game because he deserves it. But of course, nobody else cares about snaps in a win other than this random stat. So I'm sure if he plays, he will play the whole game, and if he can't, he won't.
Speaking of other injury news, Sky Moore was activated from the injury reserve. He is a full participant in practice Wednesday and Thursday, so it sounds like he will be healthy enough to go in this game. Now, whether he will play or not is a different question because, of course, he was not performing well when he was healthy and his snaps were being cut and he was playing his way off the field before he got hurt in the Patriots game. But he is back, he is healthy, and he could potentially be active on Sunday.
Really interesting situation with both Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney on this roster, because and Mecole Hardman, really.
Yes.
Like, all three of those guys have been, you know, almost sole responsibly for losing games for the Chiefs this year at some point. And, you know, MVS got himself out of the doghouse.
Playoff MVS.
He caught three massive, big catches for the Chiefs in the playoffs. So, you know, it would be pretty fitting if Sky and Toney come back and do what they did last year and catch a Super Bowl touchdown or run a big punt back or, you know, make a big play and don't screw up. That would be fun. It would be poetic. It would sure make all of us feel good about them being on the roster all year compared to if they go out and they screw up. If one of these guys fumbles a punt return, well, Richie James will be doing that, but drops a big third down or something, like, it's, people are going to rightfully say, like, what the hell were you doing putting them out there in the biggest game of the year when they hadn't shown it all year? So it'd be really interesting of what the offensive staff thinks about this deal, if they think that that's just noise and they want to get their guys out there, or if they're afraid that they suck at football. We'll see.
Yeah, it is going to be really interesting. We'll talk more about Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, I'm sure, as we get into the rest of the news and the game preview. But one other injury item, Jerick McKinnon has been designated to return. That happened since the last time we recorded. And at first, Andy said he was going to be a long shot to play. He is a limited participant. He's got that groin injury that he's working his way back from. Limited on Wednesday, limited on Thursday. But he hasn't been ruled out. Andy said it would probably be kind of a long shot for him to play, but he is practicing. And he's another one of those guys, along with Joe Tooney, who obviously is a veteran in the league and a veteran on this team and knows the offense. And obviously, you know, the last couple of regular seasons has really had his snap counts limited. So he's used to kind of just coming in at the end of the season and doing his work. So a lot of people have speculated that they just activated him kind of so, you know, he can practice in Vegas and be a part of the squad. And, you know, the Niners then potentially have to game plan for him a little bit, but would obviously be huge if he was able to go. It's still up in the air whether he will be healthy enough to play or not.
Yeah, you know, you don't really want to say that your RB3 is a big addition either way. You know, I mean, he will still be behind Clyde in the depth chart, even if he is activated for this game. And of course, Pacheco's the bell cow. So I hope that he can get in there. I trust him. Trust is something that this team has not had a lot of guys earn on the offensive side of the ball. And I trust Jerick McKinnon. I trust his decision making. I trust his playmaking ability. He's explosive when he's healthy. I know this is obviously an injured McKinnon with the groin, but yeah, I think that if they get him in there, the thought would be that they're going to sprinkle him in every now and then, and that's good. That only makes the Chiefs better, so we'll see how it goes.
The Niners across the way are pretty much fully healthy. Not a whole lot to discuss there. That's obviously the benefit of getting the first round bye and then, you know, being able to work your way through two, I mean, relative to the two teams the Chiefs played the last 2 weeks to get here, let's be honest, two softer teams. I mean, they played, you know, the Packers were obviously hot, but they played a 7 seed and then they played a 3 seed where they had to come back from down 17 and a half. But they are healthy coming into this game and they have pretty much everybody on their roster ready to go. So that'll do it for the injury news. Let's go to just sort of the general news of the week. We have media night on Monday. We have the daily pressers almost every day. Andy Reid speaking to the media every day. Patrick Mahomes is speaking to the media every day. Travis Kelce speaking to the media every day. And pretty much everybody on or associated with the team has given at least one interview this week. So let's cruise through some of this news. Let's start with Andy Reid, who said today that he will not be retiring on Sunday. He said, it's not going to be, I don't know when it's going to be. It's not going to be on Sunday. Clark Hunt and Patrick Mahomes both were asked about this week, and they both said that they would be surprised if he was going to retire. Peter King, who is an actual journalist, unlike some other people who have discussed this possibility, does not expect Andy Reid to retire, and he has a good relationship with Andy. He got a pretty exclusive interview with him last year or the year before. But nobody can guarantee that he won't retire next week. I mean, like, maybe I've been listening to too much Taylor Swift, and I've got too much of the wordsmith's mentality. The tortured poet in me is seeing the different possibilities here. But he didn't say he was definitely going to be back next year. And to be frank, neither did the next guy on this list. But that was kind of the main – I feel like this has been sort of the main talking point with Andy this week. Everybody always asks him about cheeseburgers and what his favorite food is. Now it seems like he's entered the phase of his career where if they're not asking him goofball food questions, it's, you know, what's the next step for Andy Reid and when is it going to come?
Yeah, I get really tired of this question with the older coaches and athletes. Like, none of them are going to break this news before it happens. None of them. They're all going to tell you that they're, you know, they don't see it right now, but they also are not going to rule it out because these guys don't like doing that. They don't like giving guarantees and saying, I am 100% committed and coming back to the Chiefs next season, because that's unrealistic. It's unrealistic to expect that commitment. They have to think it over. They have to approach every offseason with the same type of, you know, do I really want to go into the grind next year? And I wish I know why they ask the question, because it's interesting and because people want to know and because they have a microphone in their face. But like, I wish people would respect that process a little bit more. And, you know, if the guy's going to retire, just let him freaking announce that he's going to retire. Just wait until he announces it. And then you can talk about the fact that he's retiring. But until then, it just feels like this, like, never ending. Like, how can Andy Reid possibly shake this question if he wanted to coach another 10 years? If he had that in him, how could he possibly tell people for the next 10 years, don't freaking ask me every offseason and every playoffs if I'm going to retire? He can't do it. It just, it's annoying.
I mean, he pretty much would have to say, I'm coaching this team until I drop dead.
I mean, which is unrealistic also.
At his age, and obviously it's unrealistic. And let's roll into the next item of news, because you mentioned how tough it would be to get, you know, a straight answer out of any of these coaches. Obviously, tougher than most, Andy Reid. And here's an all-time Andy Reid player who's only ever played under Andy Reid, Travis Kelce. Has said the last couple of weeks that he wants this Super Bowl even more than he wanted the first Super Bowl, which is pretty wild to me.
Yeah.
He has mentioned that the team has faced a lot of adversity this year. That makes it, you know, harder. That makes it more special if they were to go on to win this year. Nobody believed in them, whatever. He's mentioned going back to back. He's mentioned having to play those games on the road. And obviously, you know, this is the first time that they had to play a road playoff game to get to a Super Bowl. This is the first time that, you know, this is their first opportunity since Tampa, which obviously did not go well, for them to go back-to-back. And this is the longest drought in NFL history without a back-to-back Super Bowl champion. It's been 20
on the nose.
Yeah, 20 years. 20 years since the Patriots did it last. And that's the longest drought in NFL history without a back-to-back repeat champion. But there are two things that he has not mentioned in the context of why he wants the Super Bowl so badly. One is Taylor Swift. And the other is that he might also be contemplating retirement. And I don't want to speak this into existence, but Jason still hasn't made a formal announcement on whether he's coming back or not. You know, it's possible that he's waiting for Travis to win the Super Bowl and they can both announce their retirement and ride off into the sunset together. And in 5 years, both be elected to the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. It's possible that he wants to go back to back and win the Super Bowl and then, you know, retire to raise a family with his billionaire pop star girlfriend. Possibly soon to be wife, who knows? I don't want to speculate about this, but again, what's he going to say? I mean, he has said, I love playing football, you know, like I feel like I've got a lot of good football left, whatever he's been saying, but he hasn't said, I'm definitely going to be playing football for the Chiefs next year. Does this bother you at all?
No, not at all. The first point you had about him saying he wants this one even more, like that's Kelce game week talk. He said he wanted the Ravens game more than he wanted any other game in his life. Like, that's him psyching himself up. That's just, he's not going to rank the games that he's wanted for you. That's just not really how he does. He just, every game in front of him, he wants that game more than he's ever wanted a game. That's just kind of how he rolls. And then as far as the speculation on his career, you know, if he wasn't having one of the best three game stretches of his career right now, I would be a little bit more apprehensive and think that there was a chance that if he was struggling and putting up 28 yards a game or whatever, token touchdown here and there, and looked more like a figurehead than an actual like piece of this team, I would be like, all right, this guy clearly is on his way out. But I just don't see him playing like he's a player that's about to retire. And I don't know if the Jason thing helps or hurts the case.
Sure.
Because right. The other side of that coin is that I don't think either of those brothers strike me as the types that would want to be splitting the spotlight from their brother, not with them, not saying that, oh, I don't want my brother there. It's like them saying, I want that day to be about him and not me. And I don't want to be, you know, everyone's asking Jason about Kelce, about Travis on his Hall of Fame induction day or whatever. So I don't see them as the type that would be into retiring at the same time. Just kind of gut feeling based on some new heights, you know, the way that they treat each other, which is just profound love and admiration for what each other does. I get the idea that them riding off into the sunset together is like storybook and cool. And I get that. But like, if I were them, I would be like, all right, Jason, you get it this year. I'll get it next year. Then in 5 years, it's going to be about you. And in 6 years, it's going to be about me. And we can both be there for the other one cheering in the audience as opposed to right up next to him. So that's my long-winded way of saying I'm not worried about Travis retiring. I don't really see it right now. Taylor's very busy with her life. It's not like she's waiting for him at home with nothing to do and saying, when are you going to retire?
She's got commitments at least through the beginning of next year.
Look, she's got commitments for the rest of her life. But it's definitely it's not going to be a thing where he wants to go home because she's there waiting for him. Like, they're both extremely busy people. So, no, I'm not worried about it.
I guess the other thing, too, is, you know, not that either of them need the podcast to make a living. I'm sure they're making plenty of money off the podcast, but the podcast does lose a little bit of its pop if they're both retired.
Well, yeah.
You know? I mean, what are they going to talk about?
It would lose a lot of its pop. Like their whole, I'm wondering
it
if
could
Jason
survive
retires
it could
and
survive
Travis
Jason.
Doesn't.
Yeah, it could survive a Jason retirement.
Oh, it would
like.
Survive it. It'll survive it. I'm sure,
well, sure
when they're both gone. But as far as like, the structure of their pod is so much me, then you, my stuff, your stuff, my stuff, your stuff. And like, for Jason to step away, I wouldn't be that shocked if they change up the pod.
Sure.
Like you said, they don't really need it. And if there's some type of thing where if Travis says, Jason, why don't you go enjoy being retired? And I'll have George Kittle on. And we'll do like a season or something like that where, I don't know, I could just see them kind of throwing a curveball there, because it does lose a lot of its pop if one of or both of the players are not actively playing in the NFL.
Let's return to, I teased this, Kadarius Toney. He's back. He's practicing in full. He's healthy. And he had some interesting things to say this week.
He always does.
Mentioned last week that the Chiefs managed to pretty masterfully dodge answering any questions about his mysterious Instagram live video. Andy still has managed to more or less dodge questions about that, as far as I've seen, which is, I mean, just an incredible piece of media savvy on Andy's part. And I guess, you know, they want to ask him about cheeseburgers and when he's retired. So I guess people,
I did see an Andy answer about this.
Sure.
He just basically said, he's out there. We didn't fake the injury. He's playing for us. Like, I mean,
well,
he
said that last.
He was asked it, but he didn't really give anything on it. Right. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Kadarius Toney, on the other hand, did have something to say about it. He said that the Instagram live video of him chat trashing the Chiefs was him. It was his Instagram live, but he says it was manipulated. And actually, he was trashing Giants fans, which obviously does fit. I mean, it fits his MO. I don't buy it, but it does fit his MO. He also says he's a number one wide receiver in the league if he gets the ball.
I don't buy that.
Here is the question. Is Kadarius Toney even going to be active on Sunday? And if he is active on Sunday, what in the heck are we going to get from Kadarius Toney? Because this man has entered, I mean, he has the longest punt return in Super Bowl history. He scored a touchdown last year. He played, I think, 8 snaps.
Six.
Last season.
I want to say 6.
He ended up having fewer receiving yards this year than he did last year, which is almost impossible.
We got him halfway in the year.
We acquired him halfway through the year and he didn't know the playbook. And this year he was with the team the whole time. He theoretically knew the playbook and he still ended up with fewer yards. he's a weirdo and a goofball, and he's also still probably the most explosive player that they have on the offense. So I have no idea what to expect. Andy has been completely mum and noncommittal about whether he's even going to be active on Sunday.
So, number one, I do buy the Instagram story, if only because if the Chiefs didn't buy it, I'm not sure he would be active right now. I'm not sure he'd be on the roster if the Chiefs
Sure,
didn't buy it. And
that's fair. That's fair.
I do think that he has proven to them behind the scenes that he's worth the trouble. Well, and maybe it's not even trouble. Maybe it's just trouble from the fan perspective, but that he's worth, sticking it out with. Like
Sure.
they all stand up for it. Kelce, Reed, Mahomes, all the big players, they have, and I mean, that is their MO to stand up for their guys. But like, I don't think if he was this like, fuck the Chiefs, they said I was injured, I wasn't injured. Like, I just don't see that working for him.
It
And
does
so,
seem like the Chiefs would be
yeah.
reluctant to take on that distraction during a Super Bowl week.
Especially when he's not producing. If it was, they took on the Tyreek Hill distraction because he was incredible.
Sure.
And the moment you're a distraction and you're not good on the team, there's no reason to keep you on the roster, of course. And so, all that being said, I buy that people were messing with him a little bit. Super Bowl week, you kind of get a bigger target on your back than normal. And somebody posted the video. You know how videos, how that can work online. It explodes, and then next thing you know, he's answering questions about it. But the real interesting part of this is definitely the second part of the question about the football, about the just what's the plan? What do we feel about that plan? Like, because to me, if Rice hadn't emerged, I would be desperate for Kadarius Toney to be on the field. I would be
Sure.
like, if Rice was dropping balls or took a step, if he had a Sky Moore first year, I would be like, man, we got to get somebody out there that can do something. But the Chiefs now, the difference between when Kadarius Toney started camp and started the first week with this team and now is Rashee Rice. And so I'm not really that desperate to see Kadarius Toney step onto the football field. I don't really see it working too incredibly for the Chiefs. I could most certainly, the last time he touched the ball, if you remember, was week 15 against the Patriots,
I
and
remember.
the last touch he had was a deflected interception. And so the first week he had one of those, the last game he had one of those. He just doesn't strike me as a guy that the Chiefs should be relying on in a big game. They did last year, it worked out. If they rely on him and he makes a big play, I'll be the first to say I was wrong about it, but I don't want them to. Now, whether they will or not, you also kind of look at that wide receiver room and like, what are your options? Like, if they don't activate him, same with Sky Moore and Mecole Hardman, all three of those guys, they are just these weird enigma players where even though the Chiefs have seen all three of them do completely boneheaded things this year, what are you going to do? Is it
Yeah, I
all
mean,
Justin Watson, Rashee Rice, and Richie James, and that's it? And they're the only three ones you can even play?
probably two of those guys are going to be active, and probably one of those guys is going to ride the bench. I mean, with Richie James and Justin Watson being, who they are in the second half of the season, they're probably are not, I mean, probably not all three of those guys are going to be active. So it's going to be
Oh, the
interesting. It's,
three between
yeah.
Hardman, Tony, and Sky. Oh, yeah, sure. I
Right.
follow
I
now.
mean, I do think that there's a good chance that either, and probably Hardman will be active, I would think,
I would
because
think so
he's
too.
been, even though he's been
The
incredibly
most
unproductive.
boneheaded of all three of
I
them?
mean, only because he's the one that's seen the field most recently and
Yeah,
therefore
but.
has had the chance to be the biggest bonehead most
Yeah.
recently. I
Yeah.
mean, listen, it's only because he's been on the field. Like, if Kadarius
Right.
Toney had been out there against the Bills, there's
Who knows
a
what would happen?
1,000% chance that Kadarius
Yeah.
Toney would have fumbled in that situation.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how that all goes. Let's talk bulletin board material here just really quickly. We've got a couple. Charvarius Ward was asked about just his thoughts on San Francisco and Kansas City, because obviously he was a Chief the last time this game was played in 2019, the 2020 Super Bowl for the 2019 season. And he said, everything is better in every way in San Francisco. They asked him a follow-up. He said, everything is better in every way. It's better. Jed York, the Niners CEO, he's actually not, his parents are the owners, so he is big time Nepo baby Jed York, CEO of the Niners, was asked about what he remembers about the 2020 Super Bowl. And the very first thing out of his mouth was he remembers Nick Bosa being held by the Chiefs offensive line on Jed Chipwas. He didn't name the play because he doesn't know ball because he's a Nepo baby idiot. But listen, I guess we can throw this in here too. Just as long as we're talking about the Niners and their performance at Media Week, they've been complaining all week about how soft their field is. Is the Niners field soft or are the Niners soft?
I mean, that is a A-plus headline for that one. Let me start with Travarius Ward. I was very disappointed to hear this sound clip because he's always been a guy I've rooted for. He was a guy that I rooted for while he was with the Chiefs. He was a guy that I just didn't see that like heel turn from him. And it's one thing to take this. You can take this question diplomatically all day long. And almost 99% of NFL players are going to be extremely diplomatic here and say, I love my situation now. I have a ton of friends over in Kansas City. I had a blast there. I won a Super Bowl with them. They'll always have a place in my heart, but I'm a Niner now. I mean, whatever. I've heard that exact sound clip a million times.
Right.
Or.
And from Andy Reid players.
Of course, from Andy Reid players. But I mean, everybody in the NFL knows
this. But everybody, sure.
They know how to walk that line there and not make anybody mad. And not. I mean, he must have some beef, which is crazy. Because Brett Veach traded for him as an undrafted free agent out of Dallas and gave him a shot and gave him a big platform that went and got him paid with the Niners. It was the Chiefs showed him nothing but love the entire time he was here from the outside perspective, from our fan perspective. And I just didn't expect to go into Sunday and being like, screw you, Travarius Ward. Sure. Like I liked him. He was a guy that every time Mooney would catch a pick, I would be like, hell yeah, that's my guy. Like, it just, that hurt. That one hurt.
Yeah, it was weird. Jed York, what do you think about that?
I mean, whatever. Like, everyone, this is the same category for me as, like, the Cincinnati mayor. Like, this is a complete non-entity. This guy does not matter. His opinion doesn't matter. His analysis doesn't matter. He doesn't know ball at all. Of course he's going to say the Chiefs he thought we held. He's a crybaby fan just like all the other crybaby fans are. I mean, it's that part. It's really more the Bosa soundbite where Bosa said, what's the one thing you think about the tackles? And he said they hold a lot. Like, that's at least a guy that's playing, that's sure. going to be on right. the field, that the tackles can kind of get after him for a little bit. I hope that you know, they can hold their own against him, but he's an incredible player and they're probably going to get some hold, you know, penalties against Bosa rushing. And that's fine. I would much rather get a hold and not get Pat killed or strip sacked or whatever. So, I mean, Jed York means nothing to me. The field is hilarious. That has been like, you remember incredible. Last year, the Chiefs were the road team in the Super Bowl. They practiced at Arizona State and the Eagles got State Farm Stadium and no one gave a shit. It didn't matter. It wasn't a story.
No one gave a shit until the game day and the Eagles then, I mean.
That's true. The field was also a story.
No one gave a shit until the Eagles lost the game.
Not the practice field. Oh, right. So when we're, you know, when the Chiefs are the road team, the practice field's fine, but we're bitching about the game field. And then when the Chiefs are the home team, now we're bitching about the practice field.
Sure. I mean, that's just how it goes.
They've been priming the pump for this loss for the entire 2-week run. The entire time they've been talking holding and penalties and the field and the whatever else they can, Taylor Swift, whatever they can get their hands on. Rodgers got it. You know, this is a inside job and all the whatever. I'm sure they're going to pull up some numbers, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm sure someone's going to post something about the refs and what they call and all the same stuff that people have been doing all year long. And it's fine.
Anything else you want to talk about from Media Night or from Media Week?
Dude, Media Day is brutal, or the week. The whole process, there are so many irrelevant, repetitive, squirrely questions that, I mean, obviously by like the first time someone asked something funny, like, did you see the magician and Chris Jones? You see that one?
No, I haven't seen
that. Oh, it was good. So magician had Chris Jones think of a person that wasn't going to the game that Chris wished they could from his personal life. And then he had him mime writing down the name of that person on a little post-it note in front of him that was invisible, that didn't actually exist. And then he said, crumple up the invisible post-it note and throw it to me. Chris throws it to him, and then he catches it and opens his hand up, and there's a crumpled post-it note. Chris pulls it out, and it's got the name of the person written on it. It was very, very Oz type of mentalist type of stuff that I swear to God, magicians are getting better. Like, it's crazy how good they are. But anyway, that's fun Media Day stuff. I enjoyed that. Chris enjoyed it a lot. He said, oh my God, he freaked out. But then you just get so many people that don't know ball, that aren't pretending to know ball. And I get it. It's Media Day. It's not no ball day. That's fine. But they just ask these like horrible, just same repetitive stuff about the Chiefs being the villains. The Chiefs got villains questions like 1,000 times this week, and mostly Pat, but some Travis. And you could tell by like the fifth time answering it, Pat had like this dead look in his eyes that was just like, all right, yeah, we're the villains. We want to win. And if that means we're, I mean, just this, yeah, he was over it. But the best highlight for me was 11-year-old Jeremiah Fennell, or Fennell. I guess it's like Mike Pennell and Pennell. We don't really know. But who, this kid knows plenty of ball. He got into a
he was good.
One-on-one draft for an all-time fantasy football team against Pat. And Jeremiah got the first pick at running back. They did not draft quarterbacks, and he went Barry Sanders. And then for some reason, Pat got to inexplicably just make the first pick for each remaining position. I think they wanted to either snake or do the same one each time, but they just kind of, I don't, there wasn't enough. If I was the commission, I was there, I would have straightened things out. But the highlight was when they got to wide receiver 3, and Mahomes was like, I got to pick a guy that's in the league. He had already gone Tyreek Hill, and he went Randy Moss. And then for his third wide receiver, he picked Ja'Marr Chase. And not only did he pick Ja'Marr Chase, he gave a wry, smiley, laughy sort of response to it. Like, look, I'm picking this guy, but y'all know why I'm picking this guy. And it's not because I think he's an all-time player. And I mean, just the ultimate counter troll by Pat. Love that move.
I mean, this has been, just to sort of wrap up the conversation about Media Week, this has been really a masterclass from everyone in the Chiefs organization.
Well, it better be. They're so used to it. Well, they're pros.
From everyone from Andy Reid on down, just the way that this team, and we shouldn't be surprised by it, but when you get even a team that's come close to and even has played in the Super Bowl in the last 5 years in the Niners, just the way that they answer questions is different. They don't, they don't get it. And they don't understand what it means to be in the Super Bowl like we do, because we're in it every year. And they don't understand how to avoid giving the other team bulletin board material. I mean, listen, Patrick Mahomes is out here naming Ja'Marr Chase to his all-time fantasy draft when Ja'Marr Chase is watching the game from home and said he wanted anybody but the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. And Patrick Mahomes is already like, this is like 8 steps ahead.
Masterful. Know?
It just is. It's been an absolute media masterclass by our Kansas City Chiefs. You absolutely love to see it. Let's preview this game. Which game? It's good. That's good.
Just give me the name of the game. I just want to hear you say it.
It's the Super Bowl, T.
Woo!
Chiefs, okay. Niners, Super Bowl 58. We're going to talk about each side of the ball and, of course, the special teams. But any initial thoughts, anything you want to throw out here? Of course, we'll talk to Randy as well. But anything you want to get off your chest before we jump into this game? The X's and the O's.
I'm like really, really confident.
Yeah,
that's what I want to get off my chest. We'll talk about it. I'm not saying that the Chiefs are guaranteed to win. I'm not saying anything about the Niners not being a formidable opponent, which they, by every metric, most certainly are. I just haven't had this feeling about the Chiefs in a while. I mean, I didn't have this feeling about them before the Eagles Super Bowl, certainly.
No.
And
that was a better Chiefs team.
It was
by the numbers.
The Bucks one, I was feeling great about the franchise direction, but certainly going into that Bucks Super Bowl, I understood Tom Brady and the line, and like there were significant mountains to climb before that
off-field situation on Friday afternoon before the game.
Correct. So there were,
which happened after we recorded the podcast. By the way, if we go back and listen to this pod, which I never will.
No, never.
We were both feeling great about that game on Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, as we should have. They had won 25 out of 26.
And
they were on a heater.
Friday evening.
Yeah. Then that was, of course, he's talking about Britt Reed. I guess we haven't mentioned, and it's not really worth getting too much, but Pat
It's not.
Mahomes Sr., of course, got a DUI this
Wasn't even going to
weekend.
bring it
And
up.
yeah, I mean, I
It's a
just.
nothing burger, and I'm glad that the media has treated it as such. You don't drink and drive. It's stupid. There's no excuse
Yes.
for it, especially
Yes.
when your son is a practically a billionaire
Yeah.
and
He could private jet you from the bar
you are
to the
famous.
house.
Exactly right. Exactly. Or
Yeah.
Taylor Swift could private jet you from the bar to her house. I'm sure she'd be happy to do
She
that.
would. She
I'm
would.
joking,
So
Swifties. We love her. But
we do.
yeah.
Back to the game. I am feeling like this Chiefs team cannot be stopped. And whether that will prove out on Sunday or not remains to be seen. But my initial thought here on this little bullet point about the game is that, like, come bring it. Come get it, because I just love where they're at right now.
Yeah, it felt like coming into the playoffs that, we were pretty confident that they would beat Miami because Miami was banged up and the Chiefs were at home. But I mean, I'd say my confidence that they were going to win that game was probably, I don't know, 80%, something like
Sure.
that.
That's a good,
Pretty confident that they were going to win, but acknowledging the possibility with everything we've seen this team do this year that they could have gone out, put up a total stinker and lost the game. And then the
Sure.
next week, Buffalo, tougher test. I'd say my confidence level went down. I'd say it was probably only about 65, 70%
Oh my
confident.
gosh, you were that high.
I mean, maybe not even that high. Maybe not even that high.
I
Maybe
thought they were going to
this is
lose.
hindsight. I mean, like, certainly, yeah. I mean, it probably was closer to 50-50. And then the Ravens game.
I knew they were going to lose
I
that
mean, my
one.
confidence was it was under 25%. I didn't think that
Yes,
they had a chance to
agreed.
win that game. And really, ever since the first two drives in the Ravens game, where the Chiefs go out and score back-to-back touchdowns to start that game, I would say my confidence has been at an all-time high. I
We could
literally have
reference our
never,
texts about winning the Super
yeah,
Bowl after that second drive.
exactly, without any reservation at all. Just they scored touchdowns on those first two drives. They got a stop. They were ahead, and it really feels like since the playoffs started a month ago, and really since the Raiders game, my confidence in the team really was going down. And then after they beat the Bills and Ravens back-to-back weeks on the road, it's kind of like, well, I mean, at this point, we should win. We should win the game. We just beat, the Niners are probably a better team than the Bills, but the Ravens are 100% absolutely unequivocally a better team than the 49ers this year.
100%.
And the Chiefs beat the Ravens in their house in front of an insane, hostile crowd of entirely Ravens fans, more or less. I know there were some Chiefs fans there, and shout out to some of our listeners that I know were in attendance.
Kick
But
off.
I mean, at this point, how can they lose? Let's talk about this game. Let's talk about when the Chiefs have the ball. And this really is, this is the more interesting side to me, but both of these matchups are so interesting. The offense and defensive matchups in this game are crazy. The Chiefs' offense, including the playoffs, are up to eighth in offensive DVOA. And I say up to because they have been on an upward trajectory. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But per Sumer Sports, where Eric Eager currently works, formerly from PFF, 10th in EPA per play, 9th in EPA per pass, and 21st in EPA per rush. Now, obviously, your rushing EPA is by the fact that it's rushing the ball is going to be lower than passing EPA. That's their rank. So they've been a below average rushing team on the year. And they've been, I mean, 10th in EPA per play, 8th in offensive DVOA. That's good. It's fine. On the other side of the ball, the Niners currently sit at 4th in defensive DVOA. This includes the playoffs. They are 13th in defensive EPA per play. That breaks down to 5th against the pass and 25th against the run. So on paper, this sort of matches up as strength against strength, weakness against weakness. The Chiefs are good at passing. The Niners are good at defending the pass. The Chiefs are bad at rushing. The Niners are bad at defending the rush. But it does that gel with what you've watched over the past month? I hate to throw all the numbers out, but if I were to ask you, like, does that sound correct to you? What would your response to
No, it doesn't sound correct.
that be?
It doesn't sound correct that. So there's a couple things that stick out to me. Number one, strength on strength is definitely, we'll get to it, the other side of the ball. Niners offense versus Chiefs defense is strength on strength. Chiefs offense versus Niners defense is actually weakness on weakness.
Sure.
If you want to get into kind of how the games have gone and who the teams have relied on all year and stuff like that. So just from kind of a macro perspective, I certainly don't agree with the Chiefs offense versus the Niners defense. Neither of these teams have got to feel great about that matchup, I would think.
Well, yeah, I think that's fair. So let's break that down a little bit more. As I mentioned, the Chiefs are on an upward trajectory. They're eighth in DVOA, but that's actually up from where they were a month ago because two of their four best games by offensive DVOA have come the last two games against Buffalo and against Baltimore, including their best game of the year against Buffalo in Buffalo. That was their highest DVOA of the season. It was better even the Bears game. That is opponent adjusted. And obviously it takes into account, you know, how many drives they're getting. They had the ball more in the Bears game. You know, they obviously are going against a much better defense in Buffalo than they were against Chicago early in the season. But two best games of the year. Two of their four best games have come over the last 2 weeks. And I mean, if you want to break that down into its constituent parts, let's start with quarterback, because Patrick Mahomes has been, I mean, he's on a different tier in these playoffs than we've ever seen from him, which is crazy he's the greatest quarterback of all time. But I just wanted to share this. This is from PFF Moo, Timo Riska. Patrick Mahomes had zero turnover-worthy plays in the playoffs. So that's the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Ravens games. He also avoids minor mistakes. So turnover-worthy plays, for those of you unfamiliar, that is sort of the PFF's version of an interception. And I know people get twisted about this, but listen, if you throw a ball and it hits a DB in the hands and it's not an interception, there probably should be a way to track that. And that's what turnover-worthy plays are meant to measure. You know, you're taking the luck out of the equation. Like, you hit a DB in the hands, that should be a turnover. And whether the DB drops it or not really doesn't impact the fact that you made a dumb play, a boneheaded play. Similarly, you know, if he hits Kadarius Toney in the hands and Kadarius Toney pops the ball up in the air and it ends up being a pick six, that shouldn't be on the quarterback. So Patrick Mahomes, zero turnover-worthy plays, which means he has literally not made any kind of a major mistake where the ball should have been picked off or recovered for a fumble or whatever. But he also led the regular season with the lowest rate of negatively graded dropbacks. So 10% of his dropbacks. So those aren't necessarily turnover worthy plays, but they're, you know, you're inviting pressure or you're missing a throw, right? Like, you're going to get dinged for missing a throw that you should complete. You know, they
stepping on your own feet, whatever
right,
you got to,
they do try and grade it where, like, you know, they obviously try and grade degree of difficulty into the throws. So, you know, if you're throwing a 40-yard pass, that's obviously something that you are expected to complete at a lower rate, but lowest rate of negatively graded dropbacks in the regular season, 10.3%. So only 10% of his dropbacks, he's dropping back and doing something that would be considered a negative play. During the playoffs, he has brought that down to 6.3%. So he was already the best in the league in the regular season against regular season teams, just whoever. And now against the Dolphins, Bills, and Ravens, he's almost cut it in half.
Yeah.
And he was already leading the league in addition to making zero turnover worthy plays. That is outrageous.
And he didn't cut it in half from 30 to 15.
Right.
Cutting it down to 6%. I mean, that's crazy. Counting on less than a hand throughout the whole playoffs. I would guess he probably has 100. I don't have the numbers in front of me. 120, whatever dropbacks, you know, 30 to 40 a game for three games. And to get 6% of those as negative, I mean, that's nothing. So
it is crazy.
Yeah, he, much like every other stat that we've been laughing about with him, just gets better as the situation gets harder. It's impossible, but he's the only one that does it consistently, and he does it with everything. It's just, it's another one. We're so lucky.
Speaking of GOATs, we've got, of course, Travis Kelce playing this game, as you already alluded to, and we don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but he's been playing his best ball. I mean, the Travis Kelce that we've seen in these playoffs is completely different from the Travis Kelce we've seen the second half of the regular season.
Yeah.
He is healthy. He's playing his best. And my God, the man wants this so bad. I don't know why he wants it. I don't know if he's going to ride off into the sunset and he's going to, I don't know if he has a ring in his back pocket.
Oh,
I'm not saying that he does. I'm not saying that he doesn't.
He,
That would be a reason why he could want it really bad,
He
man.
could give her his first Super Bowl ring because he's got more to spare. He
Yeah,
could
that's
just
true. He could.
kneel down and give her that one. I mean, yeah, he's untouchable right now. And it's always so funny when you hear other people, and especially other former players and coaches, talking about A, how good he is, and B, what people should be doing to stop him, because every one of them sounds the exact same way. They all
Sure.
start off with, he's incredible. He does things that, you know, that he and Mahomes are on the same page and he's unstoppable. But if I were in charge, I would hit him at the line and I would make
Sure.
sure that Travis Kelce can't
Just
beat you.
doubling.
Just make sure he's not the guy that beats you. That's what they all say. And it's like, yeah, no shit. Like, do you really think that the Ravens didn't go into that game saying, make sure Travis Kelce can't beat you? They said, yeah, we'll just put our all-pro safety on him. Boom, done. He can't beat us. And then Kelce beats him. I mean, it's just, he's been such a shot in the arm for both the productivity of the team, but also the vibes. Like, a good Kelce just elevates everybody. The just the energy and the confidence. And when he's going, this team just literally cannot be stopped. It's so much
Speaking of elevators and energy boosters,
fun.
are we
You're
getting an
on a
Eric
roll.
Bieniemy? Are we getting an Eric Bieniemy bump in these playoffs? We talked about this. I don't remember if this made it to the show, but he was in Baltimore, and I had seen a fan had taken a picture with him. And I think we discussed this off the air, but
Yeah, we did.
he took a picture with a fan, and you had kind of asked me like, well, was he
Yeah,
there in
where
an
was
official
it?
capacity? Like, where was it?
Yeah.
And it came out this week that he's just been with the team ever since he lost his job in Washington, and he's currently not employed with another team. So, of course, he came back to the Chiefs. He spoke to the team before the game in Baltimore and gave them a rah-rah speech, which a lot of guys said, fired them up and got them ready to go. And then he's just been sitting in on the offensive meetings. He's just been with the team the last couple of weeks. This is not totally unprecedented because I know you will remember when the Chiefs were in this position last year against the Philadelphia Eagles,
I
they
do.
brought in Vic Fangio just as
Yep.
like a 2 or 3 week consultant to be like, hey, please help us
Vic,
beat the
what are
Chiefs.
we doing?
Yeah, Vic, what are we doing wrong and what can we do to make this situation better? And now he's their full-time defensive coordinator. But here we have Eric Bieniemy. The prodigal son has returned, and I don't know what he's doing. But after like the first game of the season, literally the offense played one game without Eric Bieniemy, I'm ready to give him whatever credit he wants and deserves for how the offense has played last week and how it will play in this game.
Gotta say, of all the characters in the Chiefs dynasty story that there have been, he is one of the most interesting,
Yes.
just everything from what he has brought, which was tangible. He was a boon for this team while he was employed here, no question about it. But you know, the not being able to get the coaching jobs other places, the like, what does he do versus what does Andy do? All the stuff we talked about for years. And then he leaves and the offense struggles. And then Washington, you know, I thought Washington's offense was pretty efficient with him for a while, or maybe not efficient, but certainly productive. And
I mean,
then,
better than it had any right to be with like a fifth round
yeah,
quarterback
with
who
Sam
was a
Howell. And
sack
then
magnet.
they kind of like lost some steam late in the year because they realized they were going nowhere. And as NFL teams realize they go nowhere, they kind of lose some juice. Imagine that. And they fired him. And yes, this story about him showing up in Baltimore and giving him a speech, which is just, I mean, Pat said it gave him goosebumps. Like, it wasn't
Yeah.
just like, hell
Patrick
yeah,
Mahomes.
Eric's back. It's not like a, you know, like everyone was like, oh, Coach B. It was like, Pat was like, that was like one of the coolest things that I've ever seen. And I mean, that's just, yeah, I love him being in the orbit of the team right now. I hope it, you know, that they can kind of see their way of like whatever they were missing without him, they need back. They like full time. Like, I don't know if Eric wants to come back. I don't know if that's in his desire next year to be like a chief again. But like, if he does, I just hope they figure it out, because I mean, if he has something to do with this postseason run, they gotta bring him back full time. Like, he's the man.
Let's talk really quick about the Niners defense, because we mentioned the Chiefs offense is on an upward trajectory and some of the reasons that might be. The Niners are, I don't want to say that they're in a downward spiral. It's not quite that dramatic, but consider this. They are currently fourth in defensive DVOA for the year. Really good, actually higher than the Chiefs. They're sixth since week 11. So if you break it down into kind of the second half of the year, that doesn't seem like a dramatic drop off. But if you actually look at the constituent parts of that DVOA, they were about 20% better than league average through half of the year. And they were one of the two best defenses in the league, you know? And now they're about 10% better than the rest of the league, which means they have essentially halved their defense efficiency over the back half of the season. They have not played as well down the stretch, and they've struggled these last two playoff games against teams that, I mean, the Lions and the Packers are dynamic offenses. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you could make an argument that across the board, those might be more dangerous offenses than the Chiefs
Yeah,
have.
sure.
But I mean, this to me represents the biggest coaching mismatch in the game. Steve Spagnuolo versus Kyle Shanahan, we're about to talk about that. That's Clash of the Titans. That's like, you know, the son of one of the greatest offensive innovators who himself has now taken the league by storm. Half the league is running the Shanahan offense versus probably the greatest defensive coordinator ever in Steve Spagnuolo, who's got an all-time pelt on the wall. You know, he killed the greatest dragon in the history of sports, the 18-0 Patriots. He's now, you know, got three rings as a defensive coordinator. He's a badass. You've got Andy Reid, two-time Super Bowl champion, greatest offensive mind of his generation, against Steve Wilks. And like, I don't want to dump on Steve Wilks, but like, he's not Steve Spagnuolo, Andy Reid, or Kyle Shanahan, right? Like, he has two seasons, not counting this season, as a defensive coordinator in the NFL: 2017 Carolina Panthers and 2019 Cleveland Browns. His defense is ranked 11th and 20th in points allowed. So, you know, not great, not terrible, just kind of there. As a head coach in Arizona and Carolina, he was their interim coach after they canned Frank Reich this past year. His defense is ranked 26th and 19th in points allowed. And, you know, up against that, against Steve Wilks and this, in, I don't want to say free falling, it's not quite that dramatic, but backsliding 49ers defense, you have Andy Reid. And Andy Reid coming off of a playoff bye. And I believe his record now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's up to 31-6 or 30-6
Yeah, I
coming
saw it
off of a
recently.
bye.
Sounds right. Yeah.
So, not exactly where you want to be if you're the 49ers.
No, it's not. It's the Chiefs definitely have the coaching advantage, not just from X's and O's and been here before, but like the Niners also have the ghost of Kyle Shanahan to deal with. And
Sure.
whether that's real or not is up for debate. But to me, blowing a 10-point Super Bowl lead to this team earlier, 4 years ago, blowing 28-3, of course, the biggest screw job or screw up job in Super Bowl history. And then, he led the NFC title game by 10 going into the fourth quarter in the year the Rams won
Right,
and won
against the
the
Rams,
Super
right.
Bowl. And
Right.
like he this is a big deal for him to be on another big stage, because for the most, I mean, for actually his entire career, he hasn't been able to win this last game. And so you don't think that Kyle Shanahan's going to get a little tight in this game? Like, I don't know, maybe he won't, but to me, that's a huge just mental advantage for the Chiefs. So yes, I agree with you that for sure, Spags is right now, he's rolling in a way that maybe he hasn't rolled since the 07 Giants. And maybe there are parts of this Chiefs team that he is enjoying better than that team as far as the makeup of his defense. And then, of course, you give Andy a little time to prep, you give him some playmakers that are on the up, and good night.
Let's talk about the numbers on the defensive side of the ball. The Niners finished the year as the number one offense in DVOA. They were the number one offense in EPA per play. They were the number one offense in passing EPA per play. And they were also the number one offense in rushing EPA per play. So
That seems good.
quite a formidable offense. The Chiefs finished seventh in defensive DVOA, fifth in EPA per play on the defensive side, fourth against the pass, and 28th against the run. So this is kind of the enigma. And, you know, if the Chiefs win this game, especially if the Chiefs win this game, we'll probably have to have, you know, a tape guy. We'll have to have Seth or Dan Harms come on and break this down for us. Because
and say how.
It feels like the Chiefs' run defense has always been bad statistically. And yet, the Chiefs have this magical ability to trick teams into not just running the ball 50 times a game for 400 yards, and instead just doing stupid stuff. And they did it last week, 2 weeks ago, against the second best rushing team in the league, the Baltimore Ravens, who gave the ball to their running back six times in a game where they were never down by more than 10 points. And I don't know how Spags does it. He might be a literal wizard, but I just am not terribly concerned about the fact that the Chiefs' run defense is bad, because I think that, I mean, I'm pretty convinced at this point that, like, having a bad run defense is a choice. It's not because they can't stop the run. It's just that it's like Charlie says, I can't read and write. I just don't like to read and write. The Chiefs can't stop the run. They just don't like to stop the run. And if they need to stop the run, I'm pretty confident that they can do it.
So I think the Chiefs benefit from Mahomes in this regard. I think among all other reasons why teams wouldn't run the ball against a bad run defense, they just get scared. And they just think, if we have three bad run plays in a row, which, by the way, running is bad. You can certainly have three bad run plays in a row against a bad run defense.
I mean, even one bad run play in a row, if it's the first one.
If
you get stuffed, you're
going to have to pass. Now your 4 yards of rush ain't going to cut it. So I just think that they get in these big games against this Greek god over there, and especially if he comes out slinging. You know, the Chiefs, if they hadn't marched right down the field on the nine or on the Ravens and scored that opening touchdown, I don't know if the Ravens rushed six times that game. I think maybe that number goes way up. I think that the moment they saw that the Chiefs were in their bag and they were going to be scoring points, they thought, shit, I guess we got to do the same thing. I guess we got to go out there and play Patrick Mahomes instead of playing our game, and it bit them. So the early part of this game is going to be huge for this, the game script, and for the narrative of it. Could the Niners, if they get down 10 in this game, you really think they're going to hand the ball off? Like, you think they're going to get a Kyle Juszczyk 3 yard, you know, they're going to be throwing the ball. They're going to be saying, we have to throw the ball to catch up. And that's where the Chiefs really can win, is getting a defense that can pin their ears back, that's good at playing the pass, really good, extremely good at playing the pass, against a team that feels like they have to pass to win the game.
I mean, listen, even if the Niners get ahead in this game, like, that is tough.
That's Kyle Shanahan's nightmare.
That's tougher for the Chiefs defense, but it is Kyle Shanahan's nightmare, because this man had a 28-3 lead as offense coordinator of the Falcons. And in the second half of that game, the Falcons ran 27 plays and they ran the ball 9 times. And if they had just run the ball every single time, they could have run out the clock. People have done the math. And so I feel like, whichever situation the Chiefs find themselves in, obviously they prefer to be ahead because that's the easiest way to take the run out of the game. But I feel like either way, they have ways to trick the Niners into not running the ball. And honestly, if they want to pound the rock 35 times in this game, just look at what happened in the Bills game, right? Like, if you look at the Chiefs' success rate against the run in that game, it wasn't that good. But after letting the Bills run all over them in the first half, they got the stops they needed to, and they got two or three stops in the second half because, like you said, running the ball, even if you're great at it, even if you're having a great day running the ball, it's easier to stop than it is to stop the pass in 2024. And the Chiefs got that done. And statistically, you could go back and look at that box score. You can look at their success rate and their EPA per play against the run, and it won't look like a good day, but it was the job that they needed to do to win that game. A lot of the same offensive personnel for this Niners team. They didn't have Brandon Ayuk in 2020. I'm going to call it 2020. That's when the Super Bowl was played. It's 2019 season.
Yeah,
so
Super Bowl 54. Just refer to it as 54.
Super Bowl 54. You had George Kittle. You had Deebo Samuel, who was a rookie. You had Kyle Juszczyk, who I would consider to be one of their top five offensive weapons because the numbers aren't there, but he's the Swiss Army knife out there. Obviously the same offensive play caller, the same offense. But they didn't have Brandon Ayuk. They didn't have Christian McCaffrey. And instead of Jimmy Garoppolo, here you have Brock Purdy. So let's talk really quickly about Brock. I had that great stat about Patrick from PFF Moo, Timo Riska. Let me give you the flip side of that for Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy's rate of negatively graded dropbacks, which remember Patrick's was 10.3% in the regular season, that led the league. And in the playoffs, it was 6%, which obviously leads the league.
Pretty good.
Brock Purdy's rate of negatively graded dropbacks in the playoffs is 23%. And that would have been, for perspective, not only is it more than twice as bad as Mahomes in the regular season and like four times as bad as Mahomes has been in the playoffs, it would have been the worst rate of all quarterbacks with 200 or more dropbacks in the regular season. Any quarterback, I mean, there were some bad quarterbacks that played more than 200 dropbacks in the regular season this year. I mean, awful. Zach Wilson played more than 200 mm-hmm. dropbacks, right? He had a lower rate of negatively graded dropbacks than 23%. You know, the Panthers quarterback, the number one pick, you know, he was not good. He was not good this year. The Browns, their rotating cast of terrible quarterbacks, right? Like, none of them had a higher rate of negatively graded dropbacks than Brock Purdy has in two games in playoffs. And Steve Spagnuolo has shut down in consecutive weeks Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, who between them have two MVPs. And, you know, Josh Allen had a case for
MVPs.
Josh Allen's been in the conversation probably.
Sure. Oh, he's the second best quarterback in the NFL.
He's been in the conversation every year. Yeah. And
he's incredible.
Now Spags gets Brock Purdy.
I mean, of course he can stop Brock Purdy. He can stop Lamar Jackson. He can stop, you know, Josh Allen. He can stop anybody. He can stop undefeated Tom Brady. I mean, Spags has no dragon that he can't slay. Like, that's you put it perfectly earlier when you said he has the ultimate pelt on the wall. I mean, that is, if you got that job done, you know, no other job's impossible here. And yes, Brock Purdy has had a great start to his career, but unlike Mahomes, who had a great start to his career by physical, individual, dazzling play and MVPs and things where Mahomes would do it and you would say nobody else on earth can do what he's doing. Yeah. I mean, honestly, everyone else on earth can do what Brock Purdy's doing for the most part. I'm slandering him here. I know there are people out there that laud his you know, play so far, blah, blah, blah. The point is the Shanahan system is easy mode for quarterbacks, and that's the system he's in right now. So, yes, I think Spags can stop him because Spags can stop everybody.
And listen, one final observation to make about that before we go to the X factor in this game, special teams. But what system do the Miami Dolphins run?
Shanahan...
Yeah, who is their play caller? I mean, Mike McDaniel was on the 49ers staff the last time they played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. He was the run game coordinator. He was like Shanahan, right?
Yeah.
And
yes.
He has Shanahan. Brock Purdy can move around more than Tua can, but like Tua was getting MVP buzz 6 weeks into the season.
Brock Purdy's doing the same stuff
for throwing to wide open receivers and executing the system at a high level, which is great. You can execute a system at a high level. You know who else can execute a system at a high level? Brock Purdy, Lamar Jackson. You know what? When you have when your quarterback's advantage is executing the system at a high level, all it takes is Spags figuring out how to turn the system against you.
How to monkey wrench the system. Absolutely.
And you're dead. And he's already figured out how to do that. He did it twice to the Dolphins this year. He did it. I mean, the Niners scored 20 points in the 2020 Super Bowl. It's not like they were putting up tons of points. And the Chiefs had, you know, two turnovers in that game. Mahomes threw two interceptions in that game. And they held him 20 points on the scoreboard. So this is not Spags' first time throwing a wrench into this system. I'm sure he's already got some twists and turns. And, you know, like, it would normally bother me a little bit that, you know, they haven't played the Niners this year and they haven't done a lot of, you know, advanced scouting work on them, but the Niners are in the same boat, and the Chiefs played Mike McDaniel twice this year and they beat him twice and they
held him to 21 total points.
They crushed that offense two times.
Yes. Their best two defensive performances of the year, arguably, are the two games against Miami. They were amazing.
Let's talk briefly about special teams here, because I just feel like we have to keep this streak going. We had Randy mentioned last show the Chiefs playoff kicking woes, their misfortunes, the disparity in how Chiefs kickers have performed in the playoffs and how their opponents have performed in the playoffs. And listen, we've already gotten wide right in this playoffs. Bucker's been perfect. Chiefs are sixth in special teams DVOA. The Niners are 25th. And a lot of that is the kicking game. Niners rookie kicker Jake Moody, 84% on field goals this year. That is 66%, 4 out of 6 from 40 to 49 yards out. And for 50 plus, 66%, 2 out of 3. They've only trusted him to take 3 kicks from beyond 50, and he's missed one of those. And in the playoffs, 40 to 49 yarders, he's missed 2 out of 3. He's 33%. He's going 1 for 3 on kicks from 40 to 49 yards. He's never kicked in this stadium before. He's not practicing on it this week. And on the other side, you have, dare I say it, the most clutch playoff kicker of all time, Harrison Butker.
Yeah, I mean, Butker is such a weapon for this team, especially outside of the blip that we've talked about where he had a faulty ankle and was scooting some kicks left and right. Outside of that, last year, he has been absolute nails in not only big kicks as far as the importance in the game, but in big kicks distance-wise, both of them. He has a gigantic leg, and he doesn't miss important kicks. Like, that's the two most, you know, important things you want out of a kicker. And I mean, the difference between a Super Bowl champion kicker in Butker, who has literally kicked the Chiefs to win the AFC title game and the Super Bowl last year, versus a rookie kicker that's shanking 40-yard field goals in the playoffs, I mean, that's about as big of a difference as you can get at the kicker position.
I mean, if it comes down to a kick to decide this game one way or the other, I'm going to feel good about it.
And of course, as we are so lucky during the Chiefs playoff season, we are joined once again by the Ringer's Randy Gisarelli to talk about the Chiefs. Before we really get into the upcoming game, you have a new article. And that's like Christmas Day for Austin and I when Randy drops a new article titled The 15 Iconic Plays That Define Patrick Mahomes. You did allow us to get a sneak peek of the idea a few weeks ago when you kind of were telling us what was rattling around up there. And I just want to say that the opening bit about the Chiefs fans not asking for this, not even dreaming of being able to ask for this, was just a brilliant description of the joy we all feel. How fun was that particular article to write for you?
Well, I was going to say it's Christmas Day for you, but it's really Christmas Day for me because it means that the Chiefs are in not just the playoffs, but deep into the playoffs.
Fair.
When I get to write for the Ringer. And it has insanely become a near annual tradition, just like everything else that has insanely become an annual tradition for us. Me coming on the podcast, the Chiefs hosting the AFC Championship game, and the Chiefs being in the Super Bowl. So, but I had pitched the idea of the article to the Ringer over a year ago. And I had suggested it as kind of a preseason piece, kind of like with the Chiefs opening the season, because of course they are the defending NFL champions. I thought it would be a great piece leading into the opening Thursday night game. But at the time my editor at the Ringer was like, maybe we'll save that one for if they go to the Super Bowl again. And they went to the Super Bowl again. So here we are, folks. But I had that opening in mind the whole time, because I sometimes feel like, you know, fans of other teams, not even Chiefs haters, although certainly them too, but even just fans of other ordinary teams are under this misperception that we don't appreciate how good we have it.
Yeah.
Or that we've become instantly entitled. Like, that entitlement means that we don't that we take for granted what we have. And so I thought it was very important to make it very clear that, you know, as I put it, like, in a world where Patrick Mahomes doesn't exist, we would have been thrilled. We would have been over the moon with any of like 6 or 7 different quarterbacks that are in the NFL today.
Yeah.
You know, in a Mahomesless world, if we had Justin Herbert, I think, you know, he would be, you know, he would be the king of Kansas City. He would be the most popular athlete in Kansas or Missouri. He would, you know, have defenders, you know, claiming that he's the best quarterback in football, whether or not it's true or not. But he might very well have the reputation of being the best quarterback in football because he played for Andy Reid and would never have to play against Patrick Mahomes. So so that part of it is just like we would have been thrilled with, you know, a much, much lesser quarterback. We didn't, you know, expect Patrick Mahomes because, like the Spanish Inquisition, no one expects Patrick Mahomes because nobody expects him to exist. And he does. The fact that he exists at all should be a moment of rapturous joy for football fans in general. So the fact that he exists and he plays for our team is just, we understand, you know, we understand how absurdly lucky we are to have
him. I feel like, Randy, whenever you come on here, in a lot of ways, you sort of read my mind, and we don't give you the questions that we're going to ask you in advance. This is all extemporaneous. It's podcasting gold. But what you just hit upon and began your article with is something that I wanted to ask you about, because what surprised me this week, listening to wall-to-wall national media coverage of the Chiefs in this game, is how little the national media pundits seem to hate the Chiefs. And not only that, but how little they seem to grasp how everyone else hates the Chiefs. Like, I've heard multiple national podcasters, media pundits, talking heads say, well, the Chiefs aren't that hated yet. Like, this is going to be a fun matchup. It's going to be a great game. And that, granted, my experience is posting on Twitter and seeking
in
out
the eye of the storm,
most, seeking out the most rancid trolls on the internet. But I wanted to get your perspective on this as somebody that just published an article as a Chiefs fan in a national publication, and really starts off almost defensive of the fact that we have the greatest quarterback in the world and how we didn't ask for this as fans. And, you know, none of this is our fault. We don't have to apologize for this. What is the reaction been from non-Chiefs fans, if there has been any, and has it surprised you at all? What's kind of your vibe on how the Chiefs are perceived? Was that intro in response to a particular movement that you're picking up on, or was that just kind of, you know, just your natural Midwestern defensiveness about anything good that happens to your favorite team?
I definitely think that the Midwestern psyche is involved there. And I will say, I really do think you are seeing a very warped section of NFL fan bases on Twitter.
I don't doubt that. We talked
about this before, but yeah, Twitter is not real life. And Twitter certainly is not a representative of, like, most fans. I think, you know, because I do live here in Chicago, you know, most of my friends are Bears fans, a lot of Packers fans, fans of various teams, my college buddies, from you know, all over the country. You know, I wouldn't say like it's intense jealousy in like in a destructive fashion. People are not angry that I happen to be a Chiefs fan. And I don't think there is a ton of hatred for the Chiefs as an organization, as a group of players. Like, I don't think it doesn't feel like, I don't know how polarizing maybe the Cowboys were in the 90s.
Sure.
Where they were larger than, like, you know, the quote unquote larger than life personalities. It's ironic because, of course, you know, Patrick Mahomes is not just, you know, the biggest pitch man in corporate America, but, like, you know, Travis Kelce is, like, as large, as famous as any global athlete, certainly in NFL, maybe history, certainly over the last 6 months. But it's not larger life in the sense of, you know, oh, he's, you know, getting arrested for, you know, driving 130 with cocaine in his car or whatever. Like, the sort of, you know, the wild partying stories that you'd see from an earlier era, the 80s and 90s, or even the Patriots is certainly in the wake of Deflategate. And the Spygate. I mean, they've got multiple gates to their name. There hasn't been that kind of scandal that would allow people to pin their hatred on the Chiefs. It's not hatred; it's fatigue. I think there is definitely this fatigue mixed with kind of resignation.
Yeah,
I mean, my buddy who's a Ravens fan, you know, was just sort of distraught after the game. Right? I think I said this before, but it's like he wasn't angry with the Chiefs. The Chiefs were like, you know, the meteor sent from heaven to wreak vengeance. It was like, you know, divine retribution. The Chiefs are in, they're inevitable. Right. And if they win this game, they will be as inevitable as any football force we've ever seen, really, after a season like this. Yeah. I don't even think the Patriots, I can't think of any of their titles in which they kind of dealt with so many issues during the regular season and then just flipped a switch in the playoffs.
Yeah. I'm glad that you shared that perspective, Randy, because in addition to getting a lot of my sports interaction through Twitter, I also live in Colorado. So I really am in the eye of the storm. So that is good perspective to have. I like that word fatigue. That makes a lot of sense.
Do you feel like, is there much parallel, if any, with the Bulls with that run where like, they didn't seem, I don't know, I was younger sports fan at that time, but like they didn't seem like they were loathed and hated. It was more of that inevitability, I felt like.
I really do feel like the Bulls are perhaps the best comp in terms of just ubiquitous sports dynasties that you just could not get away from.
Yep.
Right. In my lifetime as a sports fan. And, you know, for several reasons, one, you know, the obvious comp of Michael Jordan to Patrick Mahomes,
right.
Which I've made before is just, you know, potentially the GOAT of the sport, and not just like potentially the GOAT, but recognized as the future GOAT in his mid 20s.
Yes,
sure. Right.
That's
sure.
the thing. I mean, Tom Big Brady difference. is, you know, undisputed the GOAT. When he was 28 years old, I think it would have been an unbelievably hot take to say that he's the best quarterback in football.
Right. Sure. It might have been when he was 35. I mean,
after his, you know, certainly after his 2007 season, the undefeated team, when he was 30, that's when, you know, statistically and just the way we looked at the way I looked at him, certainly, it's like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's no longer just a really good game manager on a, you know,
I mean, that was his coach team. First MVP, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was his first good year, really, statistically. I mean,
he had led the league in yards thrown in 2005 with 41-10, mind you, which is, you know, like a low. I mean, the game has changed a little. Yep. Certainly, there's that. But he hadn't really, you know, led the league in, you know, almost any other category up until his age 30 season. And then he put up at the time, you know, could make a case for one of the best offensive seasons by quarterback in history. But, right. you know, but the point is Peyton Manning was there step for step and statistically was his superior certainly in the regular season, right? The difference, the argument was always, you know, is Brady a better quarterback because he has such a vaunted postseason record? How much of that was him? How much of that was their defense, Bill Belichick, et cetera? But I mean, as late as, trying to see what year, because Peyton Manning was, there's only what, just a year older. That's interesting. Only about 18 months.
Yeah, older, a year older, started, but came into the league earlier. Right.
I mean, you could even argue, you know, as late as when Peyton Manning put up his last MVP season at age 37, when Brady was 36 years old in 2013, and Peyton Manning throws for 55 touchdowns.
Right.
And wins the MVP, you could still make that case that it was, at least it wasn't a certainty that Brady was going to be the better of the two.
Right.
You know, Peyton Manning had one more good year, one more hobbled, you know, injury prone, his worst season statistically, when of course he won the Super Bowl.
Of course. Classic.
And you know, and meanwhile, you know, Brady's career after age 36 included, you know, three Super Bowls and, you know, more passing yards. Just his career after age 36 would make him probably like a top 10 quarterback all time.
Sure. People have always broken down his career into three Hall of Fame careers. And that's, it's legitimate.
Yeah, it's very legit. But the point is, as you know, it was not until at least his mid-30s before you really were making a GOAT case. We were making the GOAT case for Patrick Mahomes at age 25, right? And he's 28 now, and it's like
it hasn't slowed down.
We're very close to, you know, we're probably by age 30, I think it's quite possible that it won't be a matter of future, you know, Mount Rushmore. It's present, not just Mount Rushmore, present top two. Like I really think by age 30, he may have only Tom Brady in front of him.
Yeah, I completely agree. You mentioned with Mahomes the Spanish Inquisition earlier, and that I want to linger a little bit more on your article because you run the gamut. You go Count of Monte Cristo, Odysseus, William Wallace. You've got a Schopenhauer quote in there.
Yeah, Arthur Schopenhauer.
I won't
That
give
was
away
great.
all your tricks here, but please, if you're listening to this and you haven't read that thing, I mean it's brilliant start to finish, but you ran the gamut there. I'm curious about your writing process. If you have a pinned down one for projects like this, are you kind of a all at once writer where you sit down at the desk with a blank doc and when you stand up, it's basically baked and ready to go? Or do you kind of massage it over a couple weeks, find some little bits and pieces and add it, and you're kind of fiddling with it for a couple weeks? How do you kind of approach that?
I mean, my writing process has always been just start with a blank page and just start typing whatever comes into my brain. I mean, stuff has been bouncing around in there for a while. Like the intro, I kind of had the beats of that, planned out months ago. But, you talk about all the quotes and comments about each play. I let it sort of spit out. The problem is, my train of thought can wander.
Sure.
As you
Join
know.
the
So
club.
I mean the what I have found is the best process for me is just start typing because usually I will end up with way too many words. And then, the process of, painfully deciding what to cut out, because every word I write is my baby and I don't like killing my children, but that's what it is. It's much easier to, write more for me than to write less. And so when I was fortunate with this one in that, writing about 15 plays, even a couple hundred words on each play, I mean, it easily turned into five,
Adds
six thousand
up.
words. This one was, I think it was, my word count was well over 6,000. Normally that would never fly. Like normally, but because of the nature of this, where you're breaking up, into, individual plays and you're including video, et cetera. There wasn't a lot of pushback in the editorial process, which I was grateful for. Because an old professor of mine was fond of a quote. I don't know if it's a true story or apocryphal, but like some Renaissance writer writing a letter to his friend started it with something along the lines of, "I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote a long one."
That's great. I love
And
that
that's
because it's
and
longer to
right.
cut down.
And that's
That's
kind of
great.
and that's the way I've always approached it. It's faster for me to just get everything out of my head on paper and then try and cut stuff out, but move things around, move paragraphs around stuff. But if time permitting, I will just, shoot out, 5,000 words in I don't know, that might be a 6 to 8 hour setting, but like
Sure.
I just try and blast everything I can out. This one was easier because it was 15 plays. I could, write 200 words about a play, in between patients or whatever, and then move on. Get when I have time, I'd move on and do the next one. And then, shape it. And, the hardest part of this, honestly, was just getting it cut down to 15 plays, as you guys know. And we had,
We talked about it,
we
yeah.
talked about it, and, I'd originally, I was trying to tell, the title for this in my head was, the story of Patrick Mahomes in 15 plays. Like I was trying to tell this story. So this wasn't the 15 greatest plays of his career, the 15 most
Right.
important, because the first four or five are, regular season plays, and many of them coming in non-game crucial circumstances, because the point was he was showing us who he was in real time. And no matter how many championships he wins, how many incredible playoff performances, how many moments he's given us like that, there's still I don't think there's a way to ever replicate the feeling of those first few weeks in 2018,
No joke.
where it was, it was just the realization that, holy shit, this is the man I've been waiting for my entire life. I mean, that feeling sitting down, and his NFL debut. He didn't throw a touchdown in that game. He had some really good moments and it was really exciting, but we still weren't sure, right? We weren't
Agreed.
sure. The Broncos weren't very good, and He was throwing the backups, yeah, but like we just didn't know for sure.
Yeah.
But we certainly saw some like very promising stuff. But that first month in 2018, and so that's why I have one of the plays is from his NFL debut against the Broncos at the New Year's Eve 2017. But then the opening game against the Chargers, where he throws the wheel route to Anthony Sherman. I mean, it was a not the most incredible athletic play or anything like that. It was in structure. It was the play, the way it was designed, but it was just such a gorgeous throw to, in such a gorgeous Andy Reid play call.
Yes.
That
yes.
just made us be like, ooh, it's like, these are the plays that Andy Reid's been like, saving for a quarterback like this. Like, I don't know if Alex Smith would have tried that with him.
He wouldn't have. He just would have thought it was too risky, I think. But yeah.
Yeah. No, so it was just like, that was one. But I think I've said this before, the first two games of that season, I didn't watch live because I just.
Yes.
So to me, it was week three and week four. The 49ers game, the throw to Chris Conley, and then the left-handed throw, of course, on Monday night. Those 2 weeks, it was, I just, because the first game, four touchdowns he threw. The second game, six touchdowns against Pittsburgh. It was, I was like, we all were like, what is going on? Like, how is this even possible? Like, it was just,
uh-huh.
Like, but it was still like, okay, I need to see this for myself. So to see those two plays on there, that's when we kept raising the floor of what this guy, well, not just the floor, but the ceiling. It was like,
both.
In the span of 4 weeks, it went from, ooh, this guy could be, a great quarterback. He could be the best quarterback in this draft class too. He could be the best quarterback to come into the NFL in, the decade. And then it was like the throw to Conley and then the left-handed pass was just like, this guy's doing things I've never seen any quarterback.
Yeah.
He's the GOAT.
Yeah.
And it was just, I don't know if I was thinking GOAT, but I was thinking, my GOAT.
That's we never watched.
GOAT. Right. I was thinking this guy will lead us to a Super Bowl. I mean, I literally wrote the article, which was written before the Monday night game, went up on the Ringer the morning after, where, I talked about we haven't reached the mountaintop, but we can see the mountains. Like I was calling my shot, not just titles, plural.
Yes.
I put that in print at five games into his career.
Lo and behold, here we are.
It's like, I've said some, I mean, if you find stuff I've written about the Royals, I've said some absolutely ridiculous, absurdly optimistic shit that should, I would be truly embarrassed to have come back. But you know what? It was all worth it because my absurd predilection for hyperbole and recency bias, because that is a weakness I have.
Sure. Everybody has that
right now. But I know some people who are much better about controlling the urge to let what a player just did color their view of what their people in the future. I've always been bad about that. But the one time I let it really run wild and planted my flag, it was incredibly, he's already accomplished in six seasons, more than even I was saying he might be capable of. Realize that we might actually be underestimating the guy. So that was, the first five plays were, regular season heroics. But then it was just like at some point, once he had established that, then the only thing we really needed to see is what can he do in the playoffs? And that was always the concern, right? Like, no matter how good somebody is in the regular season, I mean, Peyton Manning is one of the all-time great regular season quarterbacks, was pretty mediocre in the playoffs.
Yeah, not that.
I don't know if he's a, he had a reputation for choking until he came back on Tom Brady up from 18 points down in the AFC Championship game. But his postseason record was nothing special. I don't think it was because he was I hate the
shrunker.
Word because exactly it implies some sort of character flaw that you cannot handle the pressure. I don't think Lamar Jackson is a choker. I hate that
Josh term. Allen.
You have to be.
Yep.
But certain quarterback styles do not adapt well to playoff caliber defenses.
Peyton was worse. I mean, 14 and 13, his quarterback rating was like 10 points lower in the playoffs.
Yeah.
In the regular season. So,
right. So, as I'm saying, you're going up against playoff defenses, everybody's going to go down a little bit, right? On average.
Almost everybody.
Exactly. The expectation is that you're not playing well, but I think Peyton probably dropped more than he should have, whereas I don't think Tom Brady necessarily did. Tom Brady, you know, he's, you know, if you want to use passer rating, in the regular season, he was at 97. His playoff was 90. So even, I mean, even Tom Brady, 35-13 in terms of his win-loss record, performed worse. You know, his adjusted net yards per attempt was 7.06 in the regular season, 6.42 in the playoffs. So everybody gets worse. You're playing better teams. Like, that's not, you know. So, you know, when we got to the postseason, okay, the expectation here is, yeah, Patrick Mahomes is still, you know, an all-time great regular season quarterback. Can he be, you know, good enough to deal with the pressure of the postseason? And so, you know, seeing that, even losing to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, like, it was a gut punch. It was devastating, but I did not come out of that game feeling hopeless, right? It was like, man, we missed the best opportunity to go to the Super Bowl in my lifetime. But it was like, I have the utmost confidence that this is the start of something, right? Because not just because of the season we had, but because of the way he played in the playoffs, and specifically against the Patriots in the second half. Yes, he needed, you know, 30 minutes to adjust to, you know, a great, the all-time great defensive coach, you know, in a playoff game. But the second half, he was unstoppable. And then that's, you know, the play. That was the one I chose the first play. This is when the Chiefs got the ball back down 3 points with 32 seconds left and one timeout. But really, it was, to me, it was two plays in a row. In this, because in the span of two plays, he put the Chiefs in field goal range with enough time that they actually threw to the end zone. They had one additional play to try to go for the kill shot and win the game before kicking the game tying field goal. And it was like, you know, this perfectly placed pass to Spencer Ware, right? Followed by DeMarcus Robinson. And it was like, how on earth was he able to find open receivers in a situation where, you know, the best defense maybe in football, the best defensive coach knew that we had to throw, like, it's not a 2 minute drill, it's a 32 second drill. There's no doubt what you're doing. You are going to run around until you find an open receiver. And that should not be possible for for anybody, let alone essentially a rookie. And that was what opened my eyes. I'm like, my God, that not only is the moment not too big for this guy, but he's doing things in the playoffs that I wouldn't expect even the best, you know, quarterbacks in NFL history would have trouble doing. You know, I'm not saying they wouldn't, but like, Joe Montana in that situation could not have done any better. And he did it in his first playoff game, in which he, you know, actually had a, you know, a clutch situation. I mean, their first game, they demolished the Colts. So when the first time his season was on the line, and he was brilliant, and he was precise and accurate and creative and scrambled and still found the, you know, open receiver. And it might have been I'm assuming it was his third or fourth option, because Spencer Ware is never your
Yeah, it
first option.
wasn't drawn up for him, that's for sure.
So that was just like, that was like, okay, this guy's at another level. You know, that he once again, he raised the ceiling of what I thought he was. Right. And so even though we lost that, we took that away. But then you go to the next season. And then, of course, to me, the most important span of time in his career, in terms of establishing the narrative that this man is inevitable, is the game against the Texans, the comeback against the Texans, when everything around him went wrong. That's the thing. It's one thing to be, okay, it's a, you know, close game. Yeah, you had a, you know, terrible luck with the D Ford being offside, and but, you know, the game had been, you know, tight the whole game. Your teammates are doing, you know, they're performing up to expectations. It's anybody's game. The next time, it was like he was being let down by, like, literally everybody. His defense, they blew coverage on the first
Man, no
Texans drive.
joke.
Even Kelce dropped a third down pass, and I want to say maybe DeMarcus Robinson. There were two separate, the Chiefs' first two drives were both stopped by third down drops.
Drops, yep.
And then, you know, punt blocked, and then fumbled punt return. I mean, it was just like
That was crazy.
it was really for a moment, not, you just felt, oh, the Chiefs are still the, like, not even Patrick Mahomes can
Yeah.
pull them out of that. And so I had to pick, I couldn't pick, like, every single play in the second quarter, but like, I chose the what I thought was the coolest touchdown, which also was the one that gave them the lead right before halftime, was,
It's a great
the
choice.
touchdown to Travis Kelce with where he somehow dragged his back. We saw the pass and everybody thought, was he past the line? And they showed like three different replays on the monitor, and the last one, it's like you see the deliberate decision for him to pull his back leg, and
And
it's just like,
drag it.
and it's not just that he did that, but like in a passing situation where it was complete chaos. Like he was running around,
There's
the
five
entire,
defenders around
right,
Kelsey.
around him and Kelce, like, and they're all converging on different. There was just people
It's
everywhere.
crazy.
It was, it really felt like it looked like, a battlefield, literally, where just, people are shooting at other people, and it's chaos, and you don't know, cannon fire is coming out. You don't know what's going on. And somehow he not only kept his head, but it's like he could weigh all of these different factors in his head simultaneously. Know exactly where he is, exactly where Kelce is, drag his foot while, also, like, probably, leading the defenders away with his eyes. Like, he's doing six different things at once, and no other quarterback I've ever seen can do more than three. And to do that after rallying the troops from down 24 nothing, and to take the lead by halftime,
It's crazy.
unprecedented in the history of the league. I mean,
Unbelievable.
at halftime of that game, I'm like, Patrick Mahomes can fly. He's Superman. There's nothing this man cannot do. The fact that I've never seen any quarterback in the history of football do something is irrelevant. Like,
Yes.
it was like, so now his ceiling was literally like, there is no ceiling, because the fact that, well,
He flew through it.
I've only Tom Brady's, I've never seen it. It doesn't matter. Only Tom Brady's done it. Doesn't matter. I've never seen anybody do it. Still doesn't matter. He's doing things no one in the history of the sport has done. So from now on, he can, I have to assume the fact that what he has to do in a certain situation would be unprecedented in NFL history is not a barrier.
Right,
And
right.
once you reach that point, it's like, okay, then I guess we're just gonna ride this, you ride this ride for as long as we can. And that's when you just you turn off your brain, you open your heart, and you just welcome, you let the experience in, you let the joy and the wonder of being a fan of this team with this quarterback. And if you knowing that if you do that, if you don't do that, you are basically shutting out, the possibility of, watching miracles happen. It's just like, it was that to me, I mean, everything beyond that was, they're all incredible moments, but really from the Texans, after the Texans game, everything else he has done is not surprising.
He's the ultimate miracle worker.
Let's talk about the Super Bowl, Randy, because obviously we're recording this Thursday night. The game's 3 days away, and this is a good natural segue here, because in part because of everything you just expounded upon, in large part because the Chiefs have the greatest quarterback in the history of the sport. I feel like better about this game than I feel like I have felt about any of the previous three Super Bowls, and certainly better than I felt about any game this year, barring maybe week one, when we were out there to defend the title. And you've been on with us. You were on with us before the season. You were on us with us at the midway point. You were on with us before the playoffs started, and the Chiefs stumbled to the finish line. It's kind of insane that I feel this way, but I kind of just want to get a vibe check with you coming into this game. How are you feeling?
So, what I would say is this: I am not that worried about this game, and that's what worries me.
Sure.
Oh, that's good.
Because, yeah, I, the Ravens game, I was terrified. The Ravens, like I said, that was the first time I really felt like, you know, the Chiefs should not be favored. I cannot believe the Chiefs are underdogs in this game.
Yeah, me neither.
And I mean, to listen to most national, you mentioned now, it's interesting how the national pundits, you know, don't seem to hate on the Chiefs, even though they may be underestimating how much, like the general fans are hating on the Chiefs. I wonder if that's what we're seeing here, because most of the national pundits I've heard are, you know, have reached the point. It's like, why on earth would you ever bet against Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah,
Like, how
why
on
pick
earth?
against this
Like,
guy?
why pick against him? And also, but also, like the you know, the analysts, the tape guys, the guys who break down the tape, that I trust, seem to think that the 49ers are a pretty good matchup for the Chiefs. That
Yeah.
the 49ers defense just isn't that special. And you know, the Chiefs will be able to run on them with Pacheco and their interior line, and that will set up, you know, for Mahomes to throw the ball basically wherever he wants, and you know, the middle of the field, you know, that we can throw on these guys, and that, you know, Kelce, after, you know, dealing with Kyle Hamilton, yeah, they got Fred Warner, but like he handled Kyle Hamilton, and
Right.
the secondary for the 49ers is like, this is the Chiefs should be able to score on the Niners, and I'm not sure that the Niners will be, or at least that Brock Purdy will be able to take advantage of the Chiefs defense, and so I just feel like on paper, this is a good matchup for the Chiefs. Now, the Niners, their defense, you know, for the season is, I think we may be underrating it. I mean, the Chiefs with their
Sure.
great defense gave up 294 points. The Niners gave up 298, like in the regular season. Like that actually surprised me to look at that. I'm like, wait a minute, I thought their defense wasn't anything to write home about. But then you look at their defense the last, you know, 6 weeks of the season or so, counting the playoffs. They gave up 29 to the Arizona Cardinals in week 15. Then the game against the Ravens, where they, you know, got totally outclassed and lost
Crunched.
33-19. All right, they beat up a little on the Washington Commanders. Yay.
Sure.
And I guess the season finale, that was everybody was immunized.
Backups.
So yeah, that doesn't count. But then, I mean, really, what we saw with the Packers and the Lions, that's the thing. It's like in a playoff scenario where, yeah, everything's on the line against two, you know, good teams, but flawed. The Packers were 9-8, and yes, they were coming on at the end, but like they you know, nearly beat the 49ers in their first game. The Lions, who, you know, a very good offense, but still the Niners were expected to handle business there, and they were up 24-7 and really blew that game. So, and you know, scored 31. Like, if the Chiefs score 31 points in this game, I'm quite comfortable saying that they can hold the Niners to less than that. Now, you know, the Niners, their path to victory here is with you know, the best unit on the field, which is their skill position players on offense, right? With McCaffrey, Ayuk, Deebo,
Get
Kittle, and of course, and even Juszczyk, right? Like, I mean, just it is as good, you know, a five-man skill position group as we may have ever seen. Right, and it's the reason why they are where they are, and it's the reason why nobody knows if Brock Purdy is any good. But I just feel like in a playoffs, you know, in the playoffs, when you, especially when you have 2 weeks to game plan, the quality of the quarterback just matters so much, you know, even more than the regular season. And it all come to me, it all comes down to if they can bottle up Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey to me is really the key to this game, because if the Chiefs can limit him, certainly limit him on the ground, and keep the Niners from, you know, third and short, or from avoiding third downs entirely. If they can get the 49ers into third down, keep them from going to play action all the time, because because the Chiefs are having trouble stopping the run, and force Brock Purdy to beat them. I just, yeah, the thing about Brock Purdy is, you know, because his stats are amazing, right? Which is really, it's hard to overstate. Like, he averaged, his adjusted net yards per attempt on the season was 9.01, and that
Unbelievable.
is fifth best in the history of the NFL. Okay,
Pretty good.
that's it's
Pretty good.
absurd, right? He averaged 9.6 yards per attempt with 31 touchdowns and 11 picks. That is ridiculous. And he is certainly capable of great plays. He's also capable of mistakes. We see, you've probably seen the breakdown that turnover-worthy plays
Yep.
or mistake. I'm not sure the
Negatively
exact
graded
term. Negative
dropbacks.
grade dot dropbacks.
Yep.
Patrick Mahomes is at 6% in the postseason, which is incredible. But
Yeah.
Brock Purdy's at 20. Like, it's three
Yep.
times as many. And I just feel like the way to play this game is to force them into passing downs, to be aggressive. And you know what? You're going to give up some big plays, but if the Chiefs can get two turnovers from him.
Yes, that'll be huge.
He's made a number of mistakes in the postseason. Obviously, the most famous one being the ball that went off the Lions defender's
Yeah.
helmet, and I took it in
Daeed
for a touchdown.
Sims,
But it's
yeah.
like to me the key to this game for the Chiefs, if they can hold McCaffrey down, Brock Purdy, they're going to force him to beat them, and I don't think he can beat them. And if he does, and if you know what, if he does, the Chiefs still have plan B, which is, I guess Patrick Mahomes is going to have to go toe to toe with
Oh
Brock Purdy, right? Like,
no,
not the worst
right.
backup plan in the world, right? Like, I just feel
No.
like there's multiple avenues by which the Chiefs can win this game, whereas the 49ers, they're going to have to put up some points, and they're going to have to hold Patrick Mahomes back a little. Like, if you told me the game is a blowout, I there is a scenario. I'm not saying it's easy, but there is a scenario when the Chiefs win this game by three touchdowns.
Yeah, definitely.
A
Certainly
pick
a
six, pick
yeah.
six in there, and some just if they rattle pretty early,
I mean, if they swap places with the Lions last week and the Chiefs get out to a 24-7 halftime lead, that game's
That
over.
game is
It would
over.
be. Yeah, it would be astounding if they did not. I mean, the worry would be that they go into a really conservative offense or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So you
Andy.
got to be
Yeah,
careful.
sure.
Yes, I
Yeah.
don't want to rule that out, but it feels to me like if there's a scenario here where the Chiefs blow out the Niners, I find it harder to believe. I mean, and short of what happened in the Bucs Super Bowl. I mean, there's always a chance
Yeah.
that there's an injury, whatever.
Injuries. Yep, sure.
Just incredible bad luck with drops. Like with this wide receiving core, I'm not ruling it out. I just think that there is a much easier path for the Chiefs to, not just win, but to blow out the Niners than it would be for the Niners to blow out the Chiefs. So I feel pretty good about this game, but it's one game, it's the Super Bowl, everything. And if they don't pull it off, like we don't measure. The danger, the, not the danger, but the downside of where the Chiefs are now is that we don't measure success by any metric other than championships. We really, it, we, it's such a bizarre place to be. But if the Chiefs, when we look back at this era, it's the first thing we're going to talk about is how many titles did they win?
Let
And
me jump in there, Randy, because if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, that will mean what? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? If the Chiefs win, what? Fill
So,
in the blank.
the first thing is, I mean, it's obvious, but I think it bears repeating. It means dynasty. It means it's over. Like, this is a dynasty. This
Correct.
is one of, at that point, really only five or six dynasties in the NFL since, the Super Bowl era, since the Packers
Right.
of the 60s. It's the Packers, the Steelers,
Cowboys.
I guess I
Oh,
would probably put
Niners.
the Niners in there.
Yeah,
They did
sure.
it. They did three, I
Yeah.
think, three championships over 6 years. But to me,
Yeah.
it's like as long as you are consistently in a Super Bowl hunt for the whole stretch of time.
And Montana got four in his career. So, I
Yeah,
mean, yeah,
exactly.
they
They won
were.
four. So I would, and they won five over what, 14
Yes.
years or something.
Steve Young
So
one
I
got
put the
one too.
Niners in there. But really, it's almost exactly one per decade. The Packers the
Yep.
'60s, Steelers '70s, Niners in the '80s, Cowboys in the '90s. Patriots in the aughts and the Patriots again in the teams. But
Those
I mean,
bastards.
essentially
Yeah.
it was two
Two
dynasties with
dynasties.
a
Yeah.
shockingly long 10-year stretch between titles.
Right.
And that was punctuated by their undefeated team going not finishing it off, which of course brings us to the one other factor that gives me confidence here is we talk about playoff Mahomes plus playoff Spags. Like it's just
Yeah, good
like
combo.
I've just There are, if Mahomes is a little bit off, they can win this because Spags just comes up with a brilliant game plan. So there's that. But yeah, the Chiefs have the dynasty of the 20s, but also it's like they're just getting started, right?
It's
funny. I essentially said that last year after they won. It's like they're just getting started. They just won in a rebuilding year. Well,
yeah.
Now they're going to win in an off year,
yeah,
in a down year, and an off like where everything went wrong. And to me, the story afterwards is what are the other 31 teams telling themselves about how the hell do we beat the Chiefs? Like, what more can we do? Like,
right.
They didn't have a receiver for half the season. They had one decent receiver by the end of the year, and they won the Super Bowl. Like, if that's if that's the narrative, it's really going to be this. Like I meant, said the fans have fatigue. It's not fatigued by the rest of the teams, but it's just kind of, I'm trying to think of the right word, not desperation, but sort of
despair.
Despair and just kind of bewilderment. It's just like, what do we have to do to beat these guys?
Uh-huh.
Right? That's because that is going to be the story for the whole of the offseason. Because I really think after this one, it's like, finally, we're starting to see this with national punditry being afraid to finally. Being afraid to pick against Mahomes in the Super Bowl itself. But it's really going to be this narrative of how on earth can we ever pick against this team?
Got to wait for them all to retire, I guess.
Right.
Got to just wait for them.
But until that happens, why on earth would we? It doesn't matter if they have, if they trade away their best skill player. It doesn't matter if they're dropping balls left and right. It doesn't matter if they're losing games in the regular season.
Yeah,
that's what the story of this one's going to be, is that the regular season doesn't matter to these guys, which is it's funny because it's like it's not really true. The regular season actually mattered a hell of a lot because it gave the Chiefs the time to figure out what would work. This wasn't a matter of a team sleepwalking through the season. Like you may hear that, and that's going to be a very lazy take. This was not the Chiefs just didn't we're just focused on the playoffs. They didn't try as hard. They were just trying to keep the guys healthy. No,
lost games they deserve to win or anything like that.
Well, no, I mean, they did lose games they probably deserved to win, but the reason for that was because they were relying on players that were not reliable.
Yeah,
and using offensive concepts that were not workable with this roster, and it took them until the Christmas Day game against the Raiders really to just acknowledge that. The path forward here, there is a path forward, but it involves not involving Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore in the offense. Yep. And we thought MVS, and he kind of worked back into that, but
sure,
involves just not as quite as much variety in terms of play selection as well. It was just like go a little old school, play smash mouth football with Isaiah Pacheco up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And stick to, the short and intermediate range, passing game, and rely heavily on Kelce and Rashee Rice, and get Kelce healthy too. But,
yes.
But I really feel like it was not. This wasn't the Chiefs' plan. This wasn't a matter of well, we just flip a switch. No, it was a matter of, but it was a matter of them having the luxury all season that they. Could be pretty confident they were going to the playoffs. Maybe there was a little bit of a doubt at the very end, but knowing that the division was there, getting off to an early lead, they could work through these things and figure out what they need to do in the playoffs. But I think going next year, I just feel like people will act as if the regular season doesn't matter to the Chiefs. As long as they win the division, as long as they make the playoffs, whatever they do during the regular season. Will hold very little sway, I think, when it comes to the postseason and people picking against, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
100%. Feel free not to linger on this one as long, because I'm going to ask the flip side. Same question if they lose. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to the story of the Chiefs if they drop this game to San Francisco?
I mean, it's going to suck. it won't be good. It's... The thing, the one silver lining of that is just this idea that this, certainly where this team was a month ago, they weren't expected to be here in the first place.
Not at all.
And there's, you know, if they if they win, part of the reason for the despair of the rest of the league is this idea that they're going to be better next year, probably. Like, you know, so this idea, if we lose, it sucks. But there will be this, you know, I think this optimism that, you know, all these defensive players going into their third year in the NFL, and the fact that they have to fix it's almost inevitable that they fix their receiving issues. I mean, the curse of a good team is just regression to the mean, is this idea that it's so hard to improve on good players. And so to have a team that is in the Super Bowl that is this flawed is
has obvious,
such a blessing,
obvious
because
fix.
It's like you actually have a path to improve that's very easy. And should, you know, counteract any, you know, inevitable regression if Travis Kelce ages, or, you know, if he decides to retire, I suppose. You know, if they lose Chris Jones and or L'Jarius Sneed, hopefully not both, one or the other maybe. But
that'd
like
be crazy if they lost both. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I imagine that, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, well, you know, the salary cap's going up. Like, I think there are things they can do. And the fact that they, you know, that they didn't work out a deal with Chris Jones kind of, you know, ironically actually makes it easier for them to actually to lower their payroll cap for next year if they get a long-term contract done there. But I feel like there will be this, still this optimism that the Chiefs aren't going anywhere, but also this acknowledgement that if you're measuring your legacy in titles, to be one game away and to miss out, as we know from 2018, it really sucks, because like you don't get that year back. Like, time moves on.
Yeah.
And even though Patrick Mahomes is in his 20s, he's not, I mean, 4 years ago, he was 24 years old when we won our first Super Bowl. He's 28. He's in his prime. He's going to hopefully be in his prime for at least another 5 years. But like, you know, how many more bites at the apple do you get? So, so that part of it is just that it's a missed opportunity, but I don't think it, you know, and there will be people like, well, see, it's not a dynasty. I mean, we talk about that because it's fun to talk about, but ultimately, the word dynasty applying to this team or not matters less to me than just, you know, the joy of winning a championship. Like,
yes, 100%. Well, we'd be crazy if we wrapped up on a question about the Chiefs losing the Super Bowl. So obviously, to finish us up, which of these post-win storylines tickles you the most? Breaking our three-ring tie with the Raiders and Broncos, pretty good. Getting Mahomes one step closer to Goatdom and Brady and getting him his third individual ring. Getting the first back-to-back titles in the longest drought without back-to-back titles in NFL history of 20 years. Or winning this one specifically this year, despite the struggles that you just talked about. Which one of those is the first one that you go, yeah, that one's the best?
I mean, you know, obviously breaking the tie with the Broncos and the Raiders. I mean, that's fun, but I don't think that's a national story. That's fun for you and us, and you know, for the rest of the division.
Oh, I'll have a lot of fun.
I'm sure you
but
will.
But it's also
have
inevitable, right? Like, that's gonna happen.
It is.
So. I assume so, right?
Yeah.
The
Mahomes
the
and
satisfaction,
Brady.
The satisfaction of losing, or sorry, of winning in a year where people thought we would lose. That's great, but honestly, having won it last year after the Tyreek Hill trade, like I still feel like that's still more impressive in its own way than even this year, because, you know, this year we went into the season defending, you know, as the defending champions, and, you know, expected to be, you know, there are many people who predicted the Chiefs to be in the position they are now.
Right.
Like in August.
Yeah, that's
or
right.
Even
right.
In
just
October.
Got there a weird way.
Right, exactly. But it was in November and December that people started to doubt. But certainly it's nice. It will be fun to see people just kind of throw up their hands and be like, the regular season doesn't matter with these guys. Like, they can just, you know, destroy you in the playoffs. But it's not as, to me, last year, the sweetness of doing that after trading Tyreek Hill, and after the Broncos traded for Russell Wilson,
yes, after everyone
know,
was all
the Chargers. You know, the other three teams spent $500 million and were eliminated by Thanksgiving. I mean, that there's hard to top that one.
Yep.
So to me, it's the Brady Mahomes that chase, and I want to leave you with what I consider to be a one of my hottest takes ever. So, this is such a hot take that, like, Nick Wright is going to be mad he didn't come up with this himself.
Ooh.
I think. I want to see how you guys react, but I have this take. Maybe I'm crazy, but I'm going to throw this out at you right now, guys. My take is that we owe D. Ford an apology.
Mm-hmm. We Interesting. Owe
D. Ford a debt of gratitude.
Elaborate. Okay.
Okay. And
defend.
D. Ford may have done the Kansas City Chiefs and their fans an enormous favor. And let me explain why.
Okay.
There's the obvious proximal results of D. Ford denying the Chiefs a spot in the Super Bowl. Super
Bowl 53. But for causation.
But for causation. The obvious one is that if we make it to the Super Bowl, in all likelihood, Steve Spagnuolo is not hired as defensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs. And seeing as how Spags has been responsible for, you know, a big part of winning two Super Bowls, going to a third, and now a fourth, potentially three. You can certainly argue that, you know, the Chiefs have won more titles, been to more Super Bowls as a result of not going to that Super Bowl than the other way around. So that's the proximal obvious one. But I'm looking at even more big picture philosophical thing, which is this. Okay. If the Chiefs, let's say the Chiefs won that game. And let's assume they beat the Rams in the Super Bowl.
Sure.
Which, you know, given the way the Rams offense played in that game seems easy, but given the way they played against us in the regular season.
Yeah, right.
not a gimme, but
two completely different games there. But yes, let's say the Chiefs get the rematch. Okay.
Then right now, Patrick Mahomes is going for his fourth title. Meanwhile, Tom Brady retired with six.
Mm-hmm.
If Tom Brady has six and Patrick Mahomes wins his fourth, he is already within range of eclipsing Tom Brady as the GOAT, even if he never wins another championship.
Sure. I agree.
The difference between four and six, particularly in a situation in which Patrick had beaten him in their first ever playoff
They'd be
match.
One and one in the playoffs. Yeah.
And you know, Patrick Mahomes has four, Brady has six. If Patrick exceeds him in, you know, terms of regular season greatness and counting stats, et cetera. And, you know, Tom Brady finished his career with, 89,000 passing yards in the regular season, which seems formidable. But Patrick Mahomes has averaged 4,690 yards per season. And, you know, and some of this is, you know, obviously a reflection of the era we're in now. Now where there are 17 games out of 16. So there are certain advantages that Patrick Mahomes has. But,
sure.
You know, at 4,690 per season.
It's an 18-season pace.
It's about, right. You know, you take the number that Brady has. It's actually almost exactly 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
So Mahomes would have to maintain his pace for 19 seasons in as a starting quarterback. I'm taking out his one. His one game in his rookie year. So if he plays through age 41, he will reach Tom Brady, which is, I mean, 41 we take for granted, but, you know, that's not, you know, yes, Brady played to 45, but almost no one else played into their 40s. Aaron Rodgers is sort of limping to the finish line here. Mm-hmm. But the point is he may get there. He may even exceed Brady in terms of regular season numbers. You know, the eye test, I think we will argue that Mahomes is better. His playoff performance maybe even be better at this point. So the point is that as long as he continues to dazzle us in the regular season, as long as he continues to be competitive in the postseason, he's going to have a case. And, you know, you assume he would win at least one more.
Sure.
Maybe even two more in the span of the next 10 to 15 years, in which case he's got the GOAT lined up, the GOAT sewn up over Tom Brady. But instead, he's going for his third. And Brady has seven. At a bare minimum, to even be considered in the GOAT conversation when all is said and done, he's going to have to win five.
Yep. Yep.
Five, I think, at the very least, it means he's won more than any other quarterback.
Yeah.
Right. Other than Brady, he'll have exceeded Montana. And the difference between five and seven, I think you can at least make the case based on the body of work And you know, everything else in his resume. But five is really just the opening to make that to make that comparison. He's really going to have to go for six or seven. In other words, the reason I bring this up is we've heard the number seven a lot this week.
A lot.
Patrick Mahomes has said the word. I'm not even halfway. Right. Mm-hmm. He's not. Or is that, I think he's actually said I'm not even close to halfway.
He did.
Yeah. Because and he said it. I'm not even close. Because of course, if he wins on Sunday, he will be close to halfway. Mm-hmm. Three is close to three now, but he's not close to halfway now. I agree. And you know that that matters to him.
Yes.
You know that he is motivated. All he is motivated now. The stats will come. He's not comparing himself to Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. No, at this point, frankly, nobody is, right?
Nope.
I am so grateful that Tom Brady exists and had the career he did. Because, I mean, if Tom Brady did not exist, Patrick Mahomes would already like be on the cusp of being the most accomplished playoff quarterback of all time.
Yeah, he might have two more rings if Tom Brady didn't exist.
Well, that too. I mean, I was just thinking about his career, but yeah, like imagine that. And where you know, if he wins at least one of those, he's going for four. He'd be tying Joe Montana for the most
28
championships. Ever. And actually, if he had beaten Brady and then beaten the Rams, he would be going for his 17th playoff win instead of his 15th, which would pass Joe Montana. So the Super Bowl literally would be his coronation as the winningest playoff quarterback. And tying Joe Montana for the most championships of any quarterback ever at age 28.
Right.
And then Patrick really
And then would, what do you do from there?
What he really would have wept because there would be no more worlds to conquer. He needs Tom. We need Tom Brady there as a standard which prior to Tom Brady we thought was unthinkable. Seven championships? No franchise has won seven championships.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Tom Brady has won more titles than any franchise. I mean, I remember how, you know, we thought three was incredible. I remember how amazing it was. Joe Montana won four. Like, titles in football are hard. I guess Terry Bradshaw also won four. I know, you know, not as important to the game, you know, quarterbacks in the 70s versus later on. But, the you know, four is, you know, was this on, you know, was clearly the limit. And then Brady blew by it. Like, he didn't just pass it, he blew by it. And you know, again, raising the ceiling of what we consider to be possible. And so the fact that it's seven and not six, I do think we will look back 10 years from now at the relentless approach that Patrick Mahomes has to winning championships. I mean, what did he say to the guys this week? He's like, the report was that he basically told his teammates, I'll bring everybody back to Vegas.
Yeah. This is a business.
After
as long
the
as
game
we win.
To party.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a work trip. This is a work trip. You know, we're seeing the 49ers complain about, you know, the softness of the field and the thread count of their sheets. You know, and meanwhile, the Chiefs are out here playing in the rain, even though the game's going to be indoors and, like, you know, practicing. You know, hopefully they don't get hurt. I mean, Rashee Rice had his foot stepped on today. I think, you know, reports that, well, it's not nothing too serious, but, you know, if the Chiefs win, I mean, that's why a blowout would be delicious because the narrative after that would just be like the 49ers were, you know, mentally out of, you know, like not prepared for this game and the Chiefs were all business. And I do think that's an advantage. I mean, the fact that they reported that Patrick Mahomes is quote unquote sticking to his Super Bowl routine this week.
Yes. Yes. Schrager. That was a great
one. Just remember, you know, within his first Super Bowl, I was like, you know, this is, you know, it's kind of scary because it's just such an overwhelming thing to deal with. The Super Bowl, the media, the extended halftime with a show, you know, all of that. I remember reading about how, you know, it later in his career, the last few championships for Tom Brady, the last four, there was such an advantage that he had been there like five, six, seven times.
Right.
You know, coming back 28-3 against the Falcons, like to not be overwhelmed down 25 points. I don't know. I can't remember if it was down 25 at halftime or 22, but they were down like, you know, 20 points and had to sit for 30 minutes. And like to not be overwhelmed by that moment. I do think experience matters. And now Patrick is the experienced guy. Brock Purdy, you know, been in the league for 2 years and okay, he's been in a few playoff games. Never been in this position before.
No.
And I think that, you know, Patrick is motivated by those titles, but the fact that the bar has been set even higher, I think it will motivate him to work even harder to get there. And so if my quarterback is going for the most titles ever, like as a Chiefs fan, that, you know, that's what I want. I want him. I don't
yes,
want
you
him
live through
to be
those
satisfied
titles.
With six. I want him to be to want seven. I want him to, you know, I want that to be the goal. I want the goal to be the highest possible number. So we may one day look back and say that D4 did us all an enormous favor.
Well, I love the scorching hot take. You definitely convinced me. Talk about keeping the bar raised and being the GOAT, Randy. We super appreciate you coming on. We will have one final 2024 retrospective, I guess 2023, depends on how you call it, but next week, win or lose. And until then, enjoy the game.
Thank you, guys. I hope we have an emergency podcast in a couple of days.
Oh, my gosh. That Super Bowl emergency podcast. So we didn't get to do the one after 54. We barely decided to do the podcast, but we certainly did one after 57. It was a blast. We will have you back on for that. But otherwise, thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you next week.